Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 122. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Friday. Steelers Nation, Day 1 of the 2024 NFL Draft is in the books, picks 1 through 32. Talk about Day 2 as well, but Dave, we have to talk about our newest Pittsburgh Steeler with the 20th selection of the 2024 NFL Draft. The Pittsburgh Steelers select Troy Bautanu, the offensive lineman, the offensive tackle out of Washington. The pick is in, and he is their guy.
Yes, he is, and a little bit surprising overall for several reasons, and we'll get into a little bit, you know, why he fell. Because look, this is a guy that I think consensus wise, at least with a lot of people's big boards with the draft next, probably had at least a top 15, 18 pick. There's, you know, you look at him and you a guy that here's the thing. We didn't talk, we talked some about Fautano during the pre-draft process, but we obviously did not talk as much about him as we did about the centers and Mims and some of the other tackles and all like that. And, The main thing here, I think, when it comes to Fautano and at least the value where the Steelers got him and why he likely dropped is the whole size thing. And I know we did have a few talks about that. First, you know, from a measurement standpoint, and especially if he is right now listed as a tackle and probably will remain that way for the foreseeable future. 6'3" and 6'8" with him, 317 pounds. Historically, you don't see a lot of tackles drafted, especially early in drafts, that come in under 6'4". Now, you know, one thing that I think that you drove home during the pre-draft process is, you know, at least he's got the arm length and he does have that. That is his calling card. That is why he's going to get every shot imaginable to probably remain at tackle as well. 34.5-inch arms, 9.5-inch hands with him. But, and you know, another reason why we probably didn't pay enough attention to him is, you know, the whole tweener aspect. Is he a guard? I know Dane Brugler had him listed, I think, as his top guard. And the fact that he played on the left side almost specifically during his Washington career. And you look at what the Steelers kind of, you know, what we thought was the plans for them with Broderick Jones switching over to left side. Are they looking for a more true right tackle? But anyway, all that. We still have the player to talk about, and that's Fautano.
Sure. There are discussions I think we should have, meaningful ones, important ones, about where he'll play. And again, Mike Tomlin saying he is a tackle, dismissing any idea. There were some, as you mentioned, draft Knicks, you know, believing he could play guard or even center, and Pittsburgh having a needed center, but he's going to be a tackle left or right side. Mike Tomlin did not say last night, but let's talk about the player himself. Yeah, in terms of value, it's really strong value overall. One reason why we didn't discuss him and guys like Buwaga as often is because the expectation was those names would not be there at pick number 20. Pittsburgh were going to get either of them. It may have required a trade up, but I think big picture, the board broke really well for Pittsburgh to sit there at 20, to see six quarterbacks go in the top 12. And despite all the rumors of a super heavy offensive run on tackles and offensive linemen, that did not occur. Some went up the board, obviously, but there was not this crazy where they all went top 15 and Pittsburgh was left with no O-line options. Graham Barton didn't go earlier than maybe some people thought that he would, and maybe myself included in that. And then, of course, Fautano was there as well. But Pittsburgh is getting just a well-rounded, I think, left tackle. He's big, he's strong, he's athletic. The length is important. That kind of mitigates the height issue overall. And the dude is a lot of fun to watch on tape.
He really is. And look, I mean, I got to admit that, you know, I'm one of the ones that, you know, kind of wondered about that tweener aspect with him. The thing is when you do go deeper into the tape with him, the arm length, the arms are his calling card. And that's what got him drafted as a tackle in the first round. He uses those arms. I think if you throw on the Michigan tape specifically and just use that as a starting point there, the way he uses those arms, the punch, the active hands, that he displays within that, look, we knew he had the athleticism. That's another reason why not only will he have a chance to stick at tackle, but, you know, if he does ever need to get moved inside, you know, that'll help his cause there as well too. But I think the thing that really, really jumps out is those arms and the way he uses them. I think Mike Martz did a great job in a video that he produced for the 33rd team last week sometime that we put up on the site this morning. Does a great job of breaking down not only the footwork of Troy Fa'atanu, but the arm and the hand usage as well too. And here's the thing: I just came off of watching a lot of tape of Barton at left tackle, because that's obviously where you find most of his tape at. And then you turn around, not 48 hours after watching that, you watch Fa'atanu's tape at Washington, both playing left tackle. There's a world of difference there with how those two use their arms. Barton uses them, you know, tries to use them more on the outside of the frame of the defender, whereas Fa'atanu definitely has that punch and mm-hmm. more refined aspect to his game. He's got even, you know, kind of a reverse ghost, if you will, where he puts the arm out there and kind of baits the defender,
right, the dead hand.
The dead hand into get his hands out there, and then he works off of that. So I think the most impressive thing about him, and I've run through three games of him now in all 22, is the use of those 34 and a half inch arms there. So I do believe that he should get every opportunity to whatever side. Now, he played over 2,000 snaps at left tackle for Washington, and what, under how many did I put? At right tackle at Washington. Now there's, I think, 100 snaps at left guard mixed in there. But I think the tape says that you give him every opportunity to stay at tackle, whatever side that might be.
Again, I want to focus on the traits of the player, but it is worth noting, and a big hat tip to Dane Brugler's draft guide for noting this, that Fa'atanu played right tackle in high school. So there is at least some background. It's way back, I know, but there is some sort of muscle memory there, and we can discuss that throughout today's show. But watching the tape on him last night, to me, and I have a similar takeaway in terms of what stuck out to me the most, was his pass sets and the way that he could vary his pass sets and attack defenders in different ways. You mentioned that bait hand or dead hand, and what that does is you flash like you're going to punch, and that forces the defensive end to shoot his hands and basically declare what his move is going to be. And that's a way to you know, be able to get that guy to probably, you know, sell his move before he wants to, because he thinks you're about to punch. He's trying to counter to that, but you're faking the punch there, and then you repunch once that defender declares what move he's going to use. You see a lot of nuance in that you don't typically see from a lot of college offensive linemen. There's downsides to that. I don't think Pat Meyer loves using the dead hand or bait hand because it might mess up your actual punch, but I like seeing that on tape. It's a kind of a tricks of the trade that you don't see again from a lot of college guys like him. But he can use the chase down set, which Pat Meyer will use on widely aligned defensive ends, the wide nine techniques, to reduce that space. And he's athletic where he can close that space, and he can certainly deliver a heavy blow on his punch. And so just watching him in pass protection, set guys differently, you really see him thinking and approach different guys at different times of the game, which I thought was really impressive. But the raw athleticism, the strength, I mean, not to get too wrapped up in a bench press number, but he did 29 reps on the bench at his pro day with 34 and a half inch arms, which is a really strong number. Typically, guys with more length like him don't have great bench numbers, but this dude is really strong. He's athletic. He's got a wide base that covers a lot of ground. And I think out in space in the screen game, I got some clips of him just knocking DBs off and just pancaking guys. And it's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, especially in that Michigan game.
He's crushing guys.
There are bodies on top of bodies, and he is the top body. in quite a few of those. Man, there's some clips, and I had one bookmarked as well too about him having to spin back in, you know, back off of some kind of like a Dwight Freeney spin, and him having to work off that him matching the spin. You know, there's two of those that are very easy to find just on Twitter alone of him using that athleticism to cut back off a spin that way. So nobody's going to question his athleticism aspect of his game. You know, the footwork really, really looks good. Mike Martz does a good job about pointing that out in his 8-minute video as well, too. The power is definitely there. He can definitely get out in space and on his horse. And I think you see attention to where he needs to be on twist and stunts very well. He worked really well with that left guard. At Washington, as far as staying on the same levels to handle twist and stunts. You know, sometimes I think you'll see him overset a little bit and give up the inside. I think when he does get beat, that's usually when he does get beat, is to the inside overall. So he'll definitely have to work on that aspect of his game there. But, you know, Mike Tomlin talked in the post-pick press conference about how he turned on tape, I think, later on in the season, and, you know, how they used him schematically in that offense, and especially to play design to that left side. Now, obviously, Penix was a different, you know, opposite-handed quarterback and those kind of things there. But, I mean, he is the highlights on some highlights, you know, in that Washington film there. So once again, why did he fall? I think you outlined some of the quarterback run, six quarterbacks in this thing. A couple other tackles obviously went. You had some wide receivers go there. I think that combined with, look, some teams, you know, you get under that 6'4" height, man, and you're talking about tackles, and there's just not a lot of history of it, Alex. I mean, what did we pull? Who were the guys?
Yeah, the last one was Isaiah Wynn a couple of years ago, and it's a short list of guys, pun intended, I suppose, that are under 6'4", that have, you know, been drafted first round to play tackle. But again, you don't see a lot of guys at his height with that kind of length.
Right.
And the length is, I think, really the... To me, I care about the length more than the height. Typically, obviously, when you look at a shorter lineman, they don't often have that length, but it's not always guaranteed that way. Graham Barton's 6.053 with under 33-inch arms. Fatanu is 6.036 with 34.5-inch arms. And so, again, different body types, and I think he can certainly stick a tackle because of that length.
I mean, you look at the even the tackles that went ahead of Joel Alt, 34.25.
You know, yeah, he's got longer arms than 6'8", Joel.
Olu Fashanu out of Penn State, 34-inch arms. Now, Latham's just a big boy, 35.8-inch arms on him. Fuaga, 33.8-inch arms. And, of course, Mims got, you know, has no problem feeding himself at 36.8. So, I mean, if you stack up his arms, talking about Fautanu's arms to, you know, guys like Alton and Fashanu. I mean, he's got him in that area. He's got bigger hands than Fashanu, as well there. So those are the reasons he's going to have the ability to potentially, you know, stick at tackle, is the athleticism, the arm length, and not only that, just how he uses those arms. Mike Martz said in that said in that video that he had that from a technical aspect, try to pull up the quote here. And yeah, I think March can be really, really critical in his videos as well, too. You've seen him, you know, really kind of, you know, he's not afraid to really speak his mind when it comes to some of these guys. And he says, where was it here? If I can find, he's going to play. He's going to start. He's going to be one of the starting five. We know that. But I think it depends on who you have at left tackle. His technique is better probably than 50% of the starters in the league when I watch him. I tell you right now, his technique's better than Dan Moore. and it's not even close. This is a guy that, depending on what side they decide, he's got a great chance to be a week one starter, regardless of the side that you put him on here. And, you know, we talked a lot about we would like to see Broderick Jones get over to that left side as soon as possible. And, you know, if that means Fautano goes to right tackle and Broderick Jones goes to left tackle, fine. If it means Fautano goes in at left tackle to start off with and Broderick Jones stays at right tackle. I think that's the consternation most people have right now, right? You got to get Broderick Jones over to the left side and you go out and you get a left tackle here. Look, they'll figure it out. I mean, they'll figure that part of it out, which guy goes where here. That's the least of my concerns, I think, right now. The main concern is, you know, will he be able to stick at tackle? And I think the tape, at least what I've seen so far, says, I mean, he's got every chance in the world to stick at tackle.
I agree. And the team has confirmed that. It's a question, a matter of what side. Yeah, my contention pre-draft was, you know, exactly where would you play him? And I still stand by that. I don't want to change my tune just because he's now in a Steelers uniform and, you know, rose colored glasses and all those types of things. But the focus has to be on, did you get a good player in the first round? If you did, as you said, these things will generally work themselves out and you'll make it work if you have good players and talented offensive linemen. And I think you have that in Broderick Jones and in Troy Fautanu. And so, I think from a value standpoint, again, this is fantastic. And I know that, you know, for every team, they say that's our guy. We're happy to get our guy with the pick. But I think Pittsburgh truly was happy to get him at number 20. I mean, you hear Omar Khan talk about that dude was sweating bullets to make sure that guy would fall to number 20. And the reporting from Jerry Dulac is that Fautanu was a top 10 player on their board. And I believe that report. And so to get him at number 20 without having to trade up is just tremendous value.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to put a truth serum or a Wonder Woman golden truth lasso on. That you probably don't remember a lot of Wonder Woman stuff, but anyway, put that on Omar Khan and say when you built your big board initially there, what chance would you have given Fautanu to fall to 20, you know?
Sure. Probably pretty low. I mean, I think expectation, I'm in my mock draft, whatever it's worth, my 7-round mock, I had him go, I think 11 or, you know, top 15 overall. So him falling to 20 again, aided by that quarterback run, was surprising.
Yeah, it was. And they'll figure it out, you know, and once again, we didn't, you know, really talk about him, give much credence to him possibly being the pick because, you know, I think we both were under the assumption that he'd go early, that Steelers would trade up. And then you combine in the fact that, you know, he's more left tackle in college, just a lot of variables involved there. Look, they drafted themselves a Steeler fan too. There's no doubt about that. The kid grew up a Steeler fan, a big Troy Polamalu fan on top of it. So he bleeds black and gold. Man, you roll back to some of the things that he said during the combine and his grittiness and his toughness. Now, I do understand there was a little bit of what, you know, wasn't there some talk about that knee on on him and all like that, and kind of worried about maybe an injury history with him. But this is a guy that played last two seasons there, and both Mike Tomlin and Troy Faletano Thursday night, you know, brushed all that stuff aside. So it doesn't seem to be a concern, you know, injury concerns when it comes to him. And the tape, you know, at least last year's tape doesn't really show any signs of any concerns when it comes to that either, you know. So the only thing they've got to figure out is what side he's going to play at this point. I know there was the talk about, you know, is this guy going to be a, you know, potentially move to center. I mean, that's the furthest, that's got, and they said as much, that's the furthest thing from their mind right now. I do admit though, when you turn on the tape and you see him out there, I mean, he looks like a guard. I mean, physically, you know, from a stature standpoint, he looks like a guard lining up at the tackle position. But then you actually hit play on the tape and you see what he does with the arms. And there's other things, there's other instances there when he's getting ready to line up and he's standing upright and he's got his arms, you know, down beside him. You also see how long those arms are. Right. You know?
Yeah. I think it's great by you to walk through the length compared to the other top tackles in this class. And he wins almost all those battles besides the super freaky guys like Amarius Mims and J.C. Latham. So that's really important. Medically, yeah, the medical concern pre-draft was not a short-term concern. There's no injury he's coming off of. Apparently, I think Albert Breard mentioned this, there were some long-term concerns over the health of his knees down the road. And again, each team has different and varying medical opinions. Obviously, for Pittsburgh to draft him, they would have had to clear him medically. So it's a little Darnell Washington like last year, where the concern was not a short-term thing, it's a long-term thing. I obviously can't speak to the medical aspect of it, but that was the concern on Faletano, was, you know, medically down the road, would he hold up? But, you know, those are problems to have 5 years from now.
Hey, kudos to the Steelers for putting measurables aside. And, you know, oftentimes we talk about, man, need versus want and best player available on the board. I mean, I think this is a situation where their best player remaining on the board dropped to them and they took them.
Simple as that. And they had the chance to trade down. They essentially confirmed we had offers to go down. You saw a lot of activity in that 20 type of range, and obviously they declined them, and rightfully so. I think trying to trade down and get a little too greedy with the way the board broke to you, because again, Dave, it broke so well. Even if Faletano wasn't there, he had all the centers there. Yeah. The corners were there. The receivers were there. I mean, it broke really, really well, despite this being an offensive heavy draft. Or when the first defender go, 15, I think. I mean, it literally never happened before. But despite that, because of the quarterback heaviness of this, it just fell right into Pittsburgh's lap.
Yeah, and you know, for them to take a guy a tackle under 6'4", damn them all, you know, and we kind of got a glimpse of that what they did with Herbig last season last year in the middle rounds, and saying, you know, we don't care about, you know, we like the player, you know, we like the tape of the player. And I think one of the things I've said during the offseason is, man, you know, it does seem sometimes that they hung up on measurables. And look, I am a measurable guy. I am an analytics guy as well, too. I'm the first one to point out that this center weighs 320 whatever pounds and would potentially be the heaviest center drafted in the first time since 2017. You know, that's part of my what I do during the pre-draft process. But you know, I think this is a perfect example, though, of them doing their homework, watching the tape, liking the player, liking what they see. He falls down the board. And even though it would have been easy for them to take a true sit trait, take Graham Barton in that situation, who was termed a generational talent, ahead of the draft, which I think that's a little strong, but you know, the Steelers love him. You know, what was the report ahead of the draft? And then, you know, I mean, how many people would have batted an eye had they taken Graham Barton there?
Nobody. I think he was considered the favorite and front runner to be the pick going into the draft.
Right. So, I mean, for them to go the direction that they went really, really speaks, I think, loud.
Sure. I think lends credence to the idea that he was a top 10 player on their board they didn't think would be there. And then he was, and you call him right away. I think even Mike Tomlin on the draft phone call said, sorry, we called you so quick. You were our guy and we're going to turn in the card and make the pick and not wait around and debate and, you know, discuss trade offers. I know this is not a one-to-one comparison. Their body types are different. Their styles are different. Their rounds are different, but remember, Pittsburgh had Kelvin Beachum at left tackle for quite some time. He was 6'0", 207, but he had some length relative to his frame. He had 33 1/4 inch arms. Now, Fautani was longer, but just relative to the height and length, you know, Beachum was an even shorter guy with acceptable length. And so Pittsburgh has had occasionally the short left tackle start for them, and it worked out. And again, the tape is the tape, and this guy, I think, certainly has the tape to play left tackle.
Yeah, I remember the whole consternation with Beachum there, and they initially tried to work him, I think, at guard in the preseason. I'm thinking, man, is this guy even going to make the 53-man roster?
Right, then, he had like a bunch of penalties, like a penalty on his first snap or something like that.
I mean, it just, and we didn't have the all 22 access that we have now, but I remember watching those early preseason games and thinking, oh man, this guy's going to have some trouble here. And then lo and behold, it becomes a tackle in the NFL. He's still in the NFL, you know,
right?
All these years later. So yeah, look, I mean, there are exceptions to the rule, and there always will be exceptions to the rule, especially when it comes, you know, to measurables and all like that. So here's the thing. He deserves every opportunity to play tackle for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think the tape bears that out, and great attitude and bleeds black and gold. And now we just sit and wait and see what side he plays on and obviously how that impacts Broderick Jones. But, you know, we went into the draft probably both thinking that there's probably a very good chance that Dan Moore is this team's week one starting left tackle. I think we can move the proper direction away from that right now.
Sure. Again, I don't know exactly what the team's plan is, and Dan Moore has been resilient. And every time you think, okay, they're going to replace him, we thought that with the Broderick Jones pick last year. Okay, they draft Broderick Jones. You got a core for right tackle. Jones become the left tackle. Moore is going to be on the bench, and lo and behold, Moore was your starting left tackle for the entire season, sans the time that he was briefly hurt with that knee injury, I think week 4. So we'll see. But obviously, you know, Pittsburgh has a direction that they're going in. And to kind of bounce off of that, just bigger picture at the selection, two things come to mind to me with the pick here is, A, for the first time in franchise history, and they've been drafting since the first draft ever in 1936, Pittsburgh has drafted an offensive lineman in the first round of back-to-back drafts. It has never happened before. So I think it's a real all-in mentality on truly being committed to investing in this offensive line and building it up with high premium draft capital at premium positions. And then Dave, we got to pour one out to our Blues Clues Pro Day streak here. Although there's a little caveat to it, which I think is pretty interesting, but with the selection of Troy Fautanu, the Pittsburgh Steelers no longer have that streak of attending the first round or the pro day of the first round selection by either the head coach or the general manager streak that dated back to 2010. They were not at that Washington pro day, Tomlin or Kahn. They sent Pat Meyer, the offensive line coach, and then Fautanu came in for a pre-draft visit, but that streak is over. Although, and I thought a really interesting note from Mike Tomlin last night when they went to the Bama pro day, you got that Washington coaching staff there, including the head coach. And so I don't know how much it was discussed, but Tomlin seemed to say that they kind of learned a little bit about those Washington guys at that Bama pro day.
Yeah. And talking there and how, you know, you, one of the games that I watched was obviously the Michigan game there, and Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan was at that Michigan pro day. I wonder if Troy Fautanu's name was mentioned to some of those defensive players over there.
Yeah, maybe one of those who was the best guy you faced, and maybe they had said that because, yeah, that Michigan game, Dave, is really good from him.
Mm-hmm. And, so. And yeah, What do you think about the potential of the screen game now?
I mean, we've been saying it for years, but hopefully it'll breathe some life into it. He alone cannot, you know, fix this running back screen game, but watching him out on the hoop, as you like to say, and being able to get out in space and hit a moving target and bury some of these smaller DBs, I mean, that's what you're looking for in your tackle.
And I'm sure you saw the clip or two of him pulling left to right too, right?
Yeah, he can pull. He's an athlete. He can work in space. The one that I loved the most was that cut block that you had posted. It's just that dude went flying up in the air. I mean, it's the most vicious cut block that you're going to see. So there's a mentality to his game that certainly fits kind of the ethos of what Pittsburgh's looking for, being physical, being nasty, finishing up front, but guys that are athletic and can move and work in space.
All right. And once again, snap wise, and they would use him occasionally. They'd move him to the other side as an extra tight end on occasion. So he's done a little bit of that, as well in some offset formation kind of things. And I'm just reviewing his snaps one last time here. Left tackle, 2,037. Left tackle snaps at Washington, 100 at left guard and 2 at right tackle. According to Pro Football Focus, Fautano had 1,336 pass blocking snaps at Washington and allowed 3 sacks, 5 hits, and 35 hurries. Sign me up for that.
How many penalties do they have him down for? I didn't check on the penalty aspect of it. I didn't see anything on tape, but I obviously not watching his whole career last night.
Let's see if I can
seem to be that. Pretty clean. Again, technically, as Mike Martz talked about, I wouldn't expect him to be penalized a lot, but I don't have the numbers on how many flags he was, you know, called for throughout his career.
Looks like 15 penalties overall, 15 flags. He had 6 last year, 8 in 2022. And 1 in 2021.
Okay, I would have to see, are those false starts, are those holds, are they ineligible man downfield? You know, I'd have to break that down some more, but not necessarily alarming numbers overall. I think, again, technically pretty strong, although a couple things to work on. Just to go the other direction, anything in this game that you're watching that says he's got to work on this, has to improve here?
Anything inside?
Okay, so inside rushes or counters or
that kind of stuck out to me. Sometimes he'll get up over his skis, bending and a little bit, and but I mean you can kind of coach that out. He gets himself a little bit overextended at times there. But those were quick run through back through 3 games last night. I think those were the things that kind of stuck out the most to me on him.
I agree. There's a bit of forward body lean to his game in the pass and run game, and that'll cause him to fall off of some blocks. And so just kind of cleaning that up. I think maybe sometimes a little late with his punch. And again, sometimes the issue with that bait hand is that it'll screw up your punch. And sometimes you'll punch a little too wide as you try to punt, you know, fake the punch and then reset and then punch again. That's why Pat Meyer does not love the idea in principle, but there is a usefulness to it. So I think just working on the timing of his punch a little bit on the placement as well, and then just kind of keeping his toes under him, his base under him, and the run and pass game are going to be the most critical things for him.
I think as good as another thing in my notes, as good as he does use his hands making a more earnest effort to kind of refit them at times. I mean, it's not drastic or anything. It's just it's minute stuff because he does look. He's got a nice snatch and trap. Once again, that punch, you always generally see his hands working inside the defender's hands, whether it be the punch or the initial hand placement. You know, just maybe just work on him a little bit more and trying to in situations where he does get maybe not the perfect hand places, just trying to work on some refits and all like that. But I mean, once again, that's minor nitpicking. I think the fact that he uses those hands the way he does, you know, I think is fantastic. Yeah. I can remember Dan Moore's tape coming out of Texas A&M and thinking, you know, why doesn't he use his hands more? You know, there was nothing that popped out on tape overall as a, you know, huge strength when it came to Dan Moore, you know, in his college tape.
Yeah, I'd have to think back. I mean, he's improved a lot to his credit. He's really worked hard. I think he has cleaned up his hand use, but he still exposes his chest too much, and that really leaves him vulnerable to bull rushes, and he's not really been able to work on that. He's worked in independent hands better. That's probably something Fatanu will have to work on, his independent hands. I don't know if I saw a ton of that on tape, but again, that can be a coaching thing too, where depending on what your O-line coach wants and teaches, you know, that can impact some things. But yeah, overall, the tape was good. I got to watch some more tape. I didn't get necessarily maybe the clearest and cleanest picture of him as a run blocker because of the scheme a little bit in terms of just, you know, traditional base blocking. There was some pulling and some reaching, you know, three tacks and things like that. But I want to dig into his run blocking a bit more to kind of see him on some more traditional run schemes.
All right. You'll have a film room coming up on him later today, maybe?
Yeah, it should be later today. It'll probably be more narrowly focused on some of the pass sets, because, again, I think the thing that stuck out the most to me was how varied he was in his pass sets and hand use and all the little techniques he would use, the snatch and trap you mentioned, you know, baiting, chase down, those types of things. And you know, he's an older prospect. He's, what, 23 and a half? Pittsburgh typically goes a little bit younger in the first round. But the benefit of an older prospect is you get guys that have played more football and just kind of honed their craft a bit more. And so you see some of the techniques from a 23-year-old that you might not see from a 21-year-old.
And obviously, we got all offseason to look at different aspects of his game. So I look forward to that first film room from you on him. What else would you like to talk about with his selection, or if we covered most of it there, at least in this initial podcast?
Yeah, I think we covered it pretty well. I'm trying to think about anything else that Tomlin and Khan had to say about the selection. Just seemed super fired up about it. Again, just to go back to the fit, I mean, if you had to guess right now, where do you think they envision him playing to start, left tackle or right tackle?
Yeah, I would just be guessing here. You
sure.
Know? He took all those snaps at left, and I realized, I obviously haven't looked at his high school tape or anything, but I mean, I think it depends how he feels about his muscle memory.
Right. Yeah. To me, you don't have to watch the tape on high school. There is hopefully some muscle memory. If they do ask him to do it, it will not be brand new to him.
Right. So, I don't know. I always like the default. You know, what has he done most recently, and what has he done well? You know. So, I'd be more apt to, you know, leave him on the left side. But you know, that's the once again I. There'll be a lot of talk and consternation about that very thing moving forward immediately from this pick, and they'll figure it out, you know. But I mean, my initial gut reaction would be, hey, just leave him at the damn left side and see at least initially if he can hang there, and then maybe move him over to the right side. But you know, you got the whole blind side, you know, thing for the quarterback. And you know, do you want height over there? But I mean, look, as we've learned in the NFL these days, you don't hide tackles.
Sure. Right tackles face TJ Watt, you know, they face Max Crosby. And so there is no the old school way of, oh, you're, you know, left defensive end to the offensive right, your run stuffer, because runs mostly go that way. And the other end is your weak side end, and he's the pass rusher. No, they come in all shapes and sizes and all directions. There, like you said, there's no hiding those guys. And if you're weak, they're gonna shift that defensive lineman over and put him on you if you're exposed and can't pass protect. So yeah, there's zero hiding. I think, again, I've gone back and forth. We'll see. As much as I bang the table for this team to move Broderick Jones over to left tackle, I think Fatanu will stay at left to start, because either way you're playing a college left tackle at right tackle, you might as well have the guy who's been playing right tackle summon Broderick Jones to just stay there, as opposed to having the new guy, you know, basically relearn or learn the position for the first time in the NFL. So I think from that standpoint, you probably just keep Jones at right tackle and Fatanu at left tackle and kind of go from there. That's going to be my guess of how they approach things.
That was my initial thought with him, but we'll see.
But you know, again, the only thing that sucks is because you say, okay, you get a tackle, you focus so much on a tackle, partially with the intent of being able to move Broderick Jones over, which was this team's stated goal. Omar Khan said I think during the combine, our plan is for Jones to eventually move over to left tackle. And now I don't know what that future holds for him.
Yeah, I don't know either. But once again, I evaluate the player and then let them figure out where he goes, you know.
Sure. Again, the focus should be on the player and the talent. If you get talented tackles, they will make it work. And so I'm not necessarily losing a ton of sleep over it, but we know this team's history of playing some of these linemen out of position and the negative results that have come from that. Again, if you have the talent, you know, you can overcome that, I think. But I just want to note that as well, because again, I talked about that quite a bit pre-draft, and I don't want to hide that necessarily just because he's sure. the Steelers pick.
And look, that was one of the, when we got into the talk with him too, mm-hmm. This is a left tackle. What happens if they draft him and you're trying to get, you know, Jones over to left tackle, and you know, how much does it muddy it up? And
right. And what if for Autanu's left tackle, Jones right tackle, and Jones gets hurt. Okay. Who's your right tackle now? I'm not quite sure. Those are smaller problems, but still problems.
Right. Right.
Because I don't think Dan Moore's going to be the swing guy. I don't think there's really an appetite right. for anybody, including for himself, to play right tackle.
Right. What do you think about Dan Moore's chances of being a week one left tackle now?
Yeah, I don't know off the top. Again, he has been super resilient, and we had this conversation a year ago, like the exact conversation when they draft Roderick Jones. And again, Moore became and remained, I should say, your left tackle. So eventually they're going to have to make a change. I mean, they're drafting all these tackles. They can't just keep trotting out Dan Moore Jr. They're drafting these tackles to play tackle for a reason. So I would say under 50%, but he's a guy that works incredibly hard, has the respect of teammates and coaching staff. He has maybe more incrementally, but he has improved year after year. He's a very capable run blocker. The pass pro is just obviously the sticking point. And so he'll be given the chance, and of course, Fautani will have to earn the job. It will not be handed to him. I'm glad there's some competition. There's some options there, but I would say under 50% right now.
Yeah, look, there. You want to talk about some hand wringing? You draft another tackle this early, and you let him sit on the sideline as long as Broderick Jones did last year. There should be some hand wringing within that. You got to get those two guys. You got to figure it out quickly and get both those guys on whatever side they need to be on, and get them out there on the field together as soon as possible. So I think it heavily increases the chance that Dan Moore is not the week one tackle now. And 24 hours ago, I certainly wasn't like that, you know.
Sure, because if they go center, then Dan Moore's odds of being the left tackle week one would have gone way up. And yeah, Fautanu is not where Broderick Jones was last year, kind of a, you know, less experienced, a little more raw, a little more toolsy, traitsy, with some refinement. He's an experienced guy with how many career starts? 31? 31 career starts overall in college?
Quite a few. Yeah. Last two seasons for sure.
Right. So in 24 years old, so an older guy, more experienced player, I think a little more technically refined, that'll help his cause to start week one.
Okay. Nice RAS on him, other than the height, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was a 9.8 something. I think you had tweeted out on the RAS.
I'll have to research it real
which
quick.
Which very much fits into the Steelers first round mold.
Right. Right.
Very athletic. I mean, the athleticism is certainly a calling card with him, but he's not just an athlete that needs a bunch of work. I mean, he is an offensive lineman who just is also very athletic.
9.62 RAS.
Okay. 9.62. Still very, very good overall. All right, Dave, anything else from Tomlin, Khan's presser? I think we've kind of intertwined most of that into our conversation already, but anything else that you wanted to mention from their discussion?
Yeah, not about the pick and all. I mean, obviously we've got all off season to talk about him more.
All right, let's talk day two. The NFL draft moves along here, resumes tonight, Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern time, rounds 2 and 3, and barring any sort of trades, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. Pittsburgh holds 3 picks, number 51, that's in the second round, and a pair of third rounders, number 84 and number 98. Need a center, Dave. Still a center's out there. You got two of the top three still available. Graham Barton went 26th overall to Tampa Bay, so he's no longer an option. But you have Zach Frazier from West Virginia and Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon out there, but also needs that receiver, corner, D-line. Let's start at 51. and let's start center as well. What do you think happens there?
Boy, it feels like they need a center, and there's really, I mean, obviously the with Graham Barton off the board, you got, you know, Jackson Powers Johnson and Zach Frazier remaining. Maybe Zach Frazier falls to you at 51. You know, we always start off the offseason saying, you know, centers get pushed down and they fall. And then we work ourselves into a frenzy saying, you know, two of these centers are probably going to go in the first round, and Zach Frazier probably won't make it to 51. Well, you know, here we are and two on the board. And how many picks do you have to go until you're on the board now? 20 got to go in front of you now, right?
It's 33 to 51, whatever the math is, 18, 19 to go.
All right. So, I mean, our two center, we built the list of teams that could potentially be looking for centers, and you're going to hit some of those teams back in front of you. Now, Tampa Bay obviously is off that list now because they got Graham Barton, right?
Right. That was one of the teams you had identified a while back. So, good call on you for that.
I mean, they're no rocket science.
I didn't know that. They kind of liked Hainsey, and so I wasn't sure where they were going to go for sure. It wasn't as obvious as I think the competition tonight is Dallas and Pittsburgh. Dallas didn't take a center. They took Guyton. They're both, I think, fighting for a center.
Right. So, I mean, do you sit on pins and needles here and like they did with Faletano and sit there and sweat it out, or do you go up and, you know, get a guy there? Because obviously we've had this conversation. If you don't get one of these big three centers, maybe they're higher than on Norzad or Van Pran Granger than we think they are, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell you this. I would not hurt my feelings if they were able to land Zach Frazier in round two.
Sure. That would be, I think, an ideal situation. Now, again, the good news is you're ahead of Dallas right now. Dallas, they did trade back last night, right? They did pick up, I think, some extra picks. And so will they try to go back up for something? We'll have to see. How far will these guys fall? I don't know. The Chargers feel a little less likely to take a center because they took a lineman last night with Joe Alt. And they desperately need receiver help. So maybe that'll help Pittsburgh's odds. Right. But obviously, trying to project all this out is difficult to do, you know, at this point. And trades will impact things as well. So if I'm Pittsburgh, though, again, a lot of variables. You talk about, you know, receiver trades, veteran receiver trades we'll discuss here. But we had mentioned a while back, I said that this team was going to trade up. It'd be in round two, go up, you know, 10 spots or so, give up maybe a fourth round pick and get a center.
And wide receiver still a glaring need.
It is, and you saw a run there at the position late in round one. Ricky Pearsall going 31, which is, you know, big news for a variety of reasons. And then Leggett going, Carolina trading up a spot to get Leggett at 32. So, you know, top receivers on the board right now, A.D. Mitchell from Texas. I would not expect him to be there at 51. Ladd McConkey from Georgia. Again, don't expect him to be there at 51 either. David, maybe your guy, Rowan Wilson from Michigan, certainly a name to watch.
Is there a chance that he falls down to the second? To the first pick in the that they have in the third?
I'd be surprised by that. The size may knock him a bit, but to knock him that much would be, I'm not going to say 0% chance, but I would not expect that.
And let's say you had to wait until the third round. I mean, wasn't there a lot of stuff about Jalen McMillan or Polk, you know, one of those two being potential fits?
Yeah, I think the Washington guys, they may continue to go to the Washington well. They got, you know, a bunch of receivers, and Adunze was taken at 9 last night. And I think McMillan and Polk, there's not been really any visible pre-draft interest in that, but Mel Kiper Jr.'s talked up McMillan being a Steelers type of guy, Tomlin type of guy throughout. And so those are named to watch. Keon Coleman from Florida State, I wonder if they'd have some interest there in him. Again, not a lot of known visible interest, but you know, he's gotten some Pickens comps, and I think he's a guy that can do damage post catch, that has a bunch of size and some big play kind of power forward type of ability. So again, a lot of it, you know, can't get everything. You're talking center, you're talking receiver, haven't even mentioned D-line and corner, but those are some options as we sit here going into round two.
Yes, indeed. It does feel, though, that they better address center. And, you know, obviously there's all this trade talk still running around about wide receiver and 49ers and you know, what are the 49ers going to do there? But I think center, wide receiver, and, you know, what are you going to do at slot? Slot corner, you know, nickel corner.
Yeah, let's see where Sanders still goes. Does he slip as you theorized he might because of the lack of size? I really felt like Max Melton is a Steelers type of guy. I couldn't fit him into my mock draft because I went receiver in the second round, but I take a look at him. If those receivers came off the board and the centers were gone, or if they just really love Max Melton, which I think they do, Andrew Phillips from Kentucky also brought in for a visit. So those are slot corners to keep an eye on.
You got to figure some of these other longer corners are going to start outside corners are going to start coming off the board here in the second round, right? Because don't you know who's all gone right now? Quinion Mitchell, Terrion Arnold. Who else went?
Nate Wiggins to Baltimore, because of course he went to Baltimore.
Right. Right. So you know you're probably going to see a little bit of a run on some corners here pretty soon. Wide receiver will probably pick up here in this next round as well, you would think.
Yeah, the corners, you know, Cooper DeJean didn't go in round one, which surprised me a little bit. You know, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Arnold's teammate at Alabama, Rake Straw Jr. from Missouri should go. And then again, mentioning some of the potential slot names in Sanders still, Melton, who can play outside and inside, Andrew Phillips. Those will be names to certainly watch.
All right, biggest needs right now. Are center, wide receiver, and slot, you would think.
Yeah, I would say so. But again, I think this team will draft an inside linebacker in either the third or fourth round. I think you're going to see that. Not in the second round, I wouldn't think, although they've shown interest in guys like Peyton Wilson, Junior Colson. But I think you're going to see maybe in that 98-119 range, them targeting an off-ball linebacker. That could be Trevin Wallace from Kentucky. That could be Cedric Gray from North Carolina. No inside linebacker has gone so far, and so maybe that'll push some of those groupings down after guys like Colson and Wilson and Cooper go maybe on in the second round.
Who would you pick if both Jackson Powers would you trade up for? Who of the two of Jackson Powers, Johnson, and Frazier would you consider trading up for?
I think Frazier would be their target, and that'd probably be the guy. When I rate my centers, I said Barton, Frazier, Powers, Johnson, also considering the scheme fit for Pittsburgh, where I don't think Powers, Johnson is ideally the right scheme fit. So short answer, Zach Frazier.
I agree. And if you have both those two on the board at the same time, look, I mocked him to the Steelers at 20th overall. You know, so I think they really, really like him. And if they could get him at 51, I would view that as a huge gift.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the board has broken so well for Omar Khan in these drafts last year's and then yesterday at number 20. So we'll see if that fortune continues or, you know, if it requires a small trade up to go up five spots, you give up something, you know, that isn't that much, which you probably wouldn't require. Then you have to strongly consider that as well.
All right. So who else might be in play today?
Let's mention D-line as well. I think that's more of a day three thing, but I won't discount day two. They've shown interest in Braden Fisk from Florida State as kind of one of the more key names to watch. Mason Smith from LSU, that's been maybe one of the most popular names to mock to Pittsburgh among the Steelers Depot crew. He thought he might go maybe even last night, which I never thought really had a chance to happen. We'll see how quickly he goes tonight, but he's a guy, Rook. What is it? From Clemson is also a guy that checks the boxes.
Yeah, especially the way Cod reemphasized last night. You know, we're paying attention to the trenches, you know.
Sure. This team is all in. They are. I'll maybe write an article on this. It's a little cheesy to say. I'll say they're talking the talk, they're walking the walk, and they're blocking the block. I mean, they are building up in the trenches, and nice. That's been so critical for this team.
All right. If this team were to draft a defensive lineman on Friday, it will be one of Rook Ororo, Mason Smith, or Braden Fisk. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, it's even hard to find other names. I think the D-line class is not super strong. I'd have to go back through the list, but those three are as good as anyone's to suggest.
All right, if this team were to draft a center on Friday, it will be one of Jackson Powers Johnson or Zach Frazier, correct?
I will throw in Hunter Norzad as a potential third round option if they miss out on Powers Johnson and Zach Frazier.
All right. If this team were to draft a cornerback on Friday, it feels like it would be one of Andrew Phillips, Max Melton. Throw DJ James' name in there, or Mike Sainer still, who I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, those are the guys they've shown largely the most amount of interest in. I wonder on the outside corners, though. Will they draft an outside corner at some point? If they do, that name's a little harder to maybe identify, you know, what that type's going to be. Is it going to be one of those longer corners like Cam Hart, like Kyrie Jackson, or maybe somebody else?
What if a guy, for some reason, like Cooper DeJean, fell down to you?
Yeah, at that point, the value's really hard to pass up. So, you know, that could be in play as well. Although I suspect he's going to go probably within the top 5 or 10 picks here tonight.
All right. And let's see, what other positions do we have here? Don't have to worry about a quarterback or a running back here. Don't have to worry about a tight end. I don't think we have to worry about another tackle right now. I don't think we have to worry about a guard. I don't think we have to worry about an edge rusher, off the ball linebacker. If they were to spend one of their Friday picks on the off the ball linebacker position, you would, I mean, all of them are out there right now, right?
Yeah. None were drafted last night. So I think it's more round 3 than round 2, right, which may eliminate names like Wilson and Colson, but we'll see. I've narrowed in on the guys they were at pro days for, because typically there's a strong day 2 correlation between their draft picks and positional coaches and where they're going. Also, should mention receiver. Forgot to mention a receiver. Right. Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky came in for a visit. Debo Samuel, but they don't actually trade for Debo Samuel or Niners receiver, but to go get Malachi Corley.
Absolutely. And let's see about the we've hit the wide receiver group several times even before this podcast here. I mean, Roman Wilson, you know, Ladd McConkey. Some of these guys are going to start coming off the board here fairly soon, though. You know,
yeah, Buffalo's at 33. If they stay, they have to take a wide receiver.
All right. Okay, so the usual names there. What else? That's got it, done it. As far as potential safeties, targets,
anything at safety, that seems pretty unlikely. But just no safeties were taken in round one, so I just want to at least acknowledge that group.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it, but
no, it does not.
We, you know, who knows? It doesn't feel like it for sure, though. All right, where else you want to go here?
That's all I got, really. I'm going to go back in the tape. I don't know if we have any emails or how you want to close out today's show or any other. Or actually, we should talk about elephant in the room here in terms of Niners and what's going on there. They take Ricky Pearsall. They draft a receiver. I mean, they're trained like, I don't know. You take it away, Dave.
There's a lot of wide receivers in that room. And look, I don't know what you want to. Ricky Pearsall's a very talented kid. I've said it several times throughout this process. I am a little bit surprised, though, that he went first round. I'm even more surprised he went to the San Francisco 49ers, which leads you to believe, man, there's a lot of wide receivers in that room right now. Obviously, all the talk about Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, and are they going to trade one of those? It still seems like they're trying to posture on their side that it's unlikely to happen, but it's always unlikely to happen until it does happen. This is a conversation you and I had a couple of nights ago, obviously before the draft that we did in DMs and all like that. We're, you know, we both Juwan Jennings fans, but quickly got that snuffed out during the offseason because him being a restricted free agent and obviously getting a second round tender by the 49ers, who they absolutely had to do that because if they put an original round tender on Jennings, he was going to get an offer sheet from somebody, and a second round tender obviously severely limits the possibility of that happening with him. Is there a possibility with Pearsall in that room now, and especially if they do indeed on keeping Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and getting a deal signed with him, is there a possibility that they'd be willing to part with Juwan Jennings?
I mean, at some point, they can't keep all these receivers, right? They have to trade away somebody. I mean, this room is super crowded, and they already have a bunch of other weapons in George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey and kind of the run concentration of this offense. I can't imagine they're just stockpiling the stockpile. So I don't know who's going to go but something's got to give here. And listen, sign me up all day for Juwan Jennings.
I'm with you as well, too. And once again, we would have talked more about him throughout this offseason, but the moment he got the second round tender, it just seemed like, well, that's gone. You know, there's no way to be able to pry him away. But things have changed now, you know, for sure. They have it feels there's just no way they keep all those guys through the start of training camp. It doesn't feel like.
I can't see it. Why would you draft Pearsall if you intended on keeping all three of Samuel, Ayuk, and Jennings? Where does Pearsall right. even fit as a almost 24-year-old rookie wide receiver?
Right. Now, look, here's the other thing. And obviously the Deebo Samuel stuff seems to have picked up just in general, you know, not necessarily the Steelers. But I'll tell you this about Deebo. Any team that were to acquire him via a trade right now, and assuming the 49ers don't eat any of that base salary of his, he would come with a cap charge of $22 million, all right, a little over $22 million. The Steelers only have $19 million free in cap space. Now, obviously, could you cut somebody? Could you do another restructure in a hurry and make all that work or whatnot? Yeah, you could do that. But unless the 49ers are willing to eat some of that base salary as part of the deal, it really feels hard for a team like the Steelers to go. And plus, he's a little bit older, you know, on top of it. If what I'm getting at here is, if the Steelers were indeed to trade for one of those for a 49ers wide receiver at this point, it feels like it would be Brandon Ayuk or at this point now, Juwan Jennings, if indeed they'd be willing to move him. Now, the other counter argument would be, would the 49ers deal Juwan Jennings without having Brandon Ayuk wrapped up on his contract, you know?
Right, especially now having drafted a receiver, there's really no urgency for them to make a deal for a receiver even right now, because they deal somebody a little bit later. They have Pearsall, you know, already in the hopper.
Right. And you know, what would you give as compensation for Juwan Jennings? Would you give up a fourth? Does that sound right? Fifth?
They don't have a fifth right now.
I mean, if your team is dealing for him, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I would give up a fourth round pick for Juwan Jennings. The only question is about the contract, because this is a one-year thing right now. He'll be unrestricted free agent. And I don't know if Jennings is the type of guy where you have a contract set in place before you trade for him. Maybe, but it's not like an Ayuk thing where that's like really important part of the deal.
Right. You could obviously get, you know, you would think that you might be able to work something out with him extension-wise with Jennings.
Right. But do you think it's something where that's really like set in stone before you make the trade for him? Because if you're trading for Ayuk, you better be really, really confident on the numbers. I don't think it's necessarily the case for Jennings, although I'm sure you could probably re-sign the guy without too much of an issue.
Right. And look, rewinding it back, the fly in the ointment here, when it comes to them maybe even potentially trading away Jennings, is would they do so before thinking they have something in line with having Ayuk wrapped up?
Sure. And they still like and value Juwan Jennings. He's a different flavor to that offense. He's come up with so many big clutch third down plays. He's cheaper as well, obviously. And so there's reasons for him to stay. And there's been no buzz about him actually being dealt. But again, at some point, one of these guys has to go. And if they're really in a lot of trade talks about Deebo and Ayuk, it's hard to think they're both going to stay. If they're really openly discussing trading them, it's like openly discussing your divorce. If you're discussing that, you're probably splitting up.
Here's the thing. At this point, you don't have to worry about the Steelers giving up a 2024 first round draft pick for one of those guys, if that's what you were hung up on, Ian and there. I think Brandon Ayuk would be a game changer, you know, a needle mover. If they were able to do that. We both have talked about Jennings, and he would be a fit, you know, in this offense as well, if you could pry him away. Obviously, Deebo Samuel on top of it. So could you really, you know, as a whole, could you really go wrong if you acquired any one of those three guys?
No, guys that can impact your team right away. No, I think there's no wrong answer there. But if you're going to trade for Ayuk, trade for him now, man. That meter's running. That price tag's gone up every day. St. Brown got paid 2 days ago. A.J. Brown got his extension yesterday. Justin Jefferson's going to get paid here pretty soon. I mean, his price tag has only gone up and up.
I tell you, if in the next several hours the 49ers announce a new deal with Brandon Ayuk, maybe you can pry Jennings away from him.
Or do they just deal Debo to somebody? Because it sounds like they're going to make a choice here. They're going to keep either one of Debo or Ayuk. I can't guarantee that. Again, we'll see. But based on the reporting, if they're discussing these guys openly, then I don't think both stay.
All right. Anything else you'd like to hit on for maybe we get to an email or two here?
No, let's wrap things up. I want to get into some tape here, some film studies, and we'll close out today's show with some reader emails.
Let's go to Thomas. Real pure. Hey, David Knox, real quick. Any chance the Steelers could swing a deal with the Commanders in round two? Send pick 51 and DeMarvin Leal for 36 to grab either JPJ or Frazier. Leal gets a fresh start in Washington and seems to be a better scheme fit in the Dan Quinn defense. Look, we tend to overvalue our own. I just don't think Leal has much trade value right now. He says send pick 51 and DeMarvin Leal as part of a move up to 36.
Again, Leal, yeah, he's like Kendrick Green to me. That's a conditional seventh round pick kind of thing you'll do in August, a cut down date. That's where I come in on that. I we can pick teams. I know Washington badly needs a tackle, and so I don't think they're trying to come off of 36 with a tackle group with some names there, but they're going to thin out here pretty quickly, Patrick Paul and others. So, could you pick a different team there? Sure. Washington in particular, though, I think they're going to maybe, be looking for that tackle there top of the second.
All right, Nicholas Gooden writes in, are your eyelids taped open? How many cups of coffee are you on right now? First and foremost, Alex, I don't know how he does it. He does not drink coffee. He don't drink hardly any caffeine. Do you, Alex?
Zero caffeine. I've not had caffeine in years.
God, now I know what's wrong with you. as for me, Nick, I'm pounding the Columbia. I'm two-fisting it. Monster drink in one hand. I am getting Alex's caffeine.
But you have a Monster and a coffee?
Yeah, I'm sitting right here with a Monster.
That cannot be good. That has to be bad for your body chemistry.
Look, I just got the best checkup that I've had from my doctor I'm a walking miracle according to him right now.
Maybe so. That's the secret. Maybe the secret to eternal life is a Monster and coffee. It's so bad for you, it becomes good.
Nick says, I don't recall hearing a lot about about Fa'utano pre-draft. Think that's mostly because it wasn't likely he'd be available at 20. Yeah, that, I mean, we just had that long talk about, why we didn't have a lot of talk about him. He says, who do you think is going to have a better overall career, Fa'utano or Barton?
I mean, I was high, I was high on Barton, obviously. I don't know. There's so many variables that can come into play in terms of, the scheme, health, just a bunch of different factors overall. I hope they both do well. I think they'll both be good NFL players.
I think they both will be as well, too. And look, I'm interested to learn to watch Barton in my peripheral right now to see how that transition goes and learn from it.
Yeah. And they are going to, I checked last night, they are playing him at center. I thought maybe they would consider guard. Cause again, I think you were right to talk about guard. And actually once you did, everybody else talked about Barton at guard.
Mike March talked about it the other day in a video as well too. Yeah. He says, man, this guy's going to be a guard, should be a guard.
Right. So we'll see what happens in Tampa Bay.
Lane writes in, why do teams trade up one spot to get a guy that will be there when they are on the clock? I think they trade up, Lane, because A, they might be afraid of another team jump. It's a poker game, you don't know for sure if, is that team receiving calls from another team going to jump up and take the player that you want? So I think teams trade up one spot so they can get the guy that they want out of fear somebody else might be trying to jump to get that same guy.
1,000%, Dave, that is the reason. It's not because you're worried about you know, the team that's on the clock taking him. It's because you're hearing three other teams that are trying to move up. We talk about the Panthers going up from 33 to 32. Where do you hear a lot of trade chatter? Back around one, teams trying to jump back in to get that guy, to get that fifth year option, to get that, you know, final quarterback or, you know, receiver that they like, whatever the case is. So yeah, I bet you Carolina was here in chatter. The teams are trying to come up to 32. Buffalo and get somebody, and Carolina said, we're going to jump in here, make sure we get our guy.
All right, one more from Nick Shuley. He's got all caps here in the title. He's got some consternation here. That's going to be my new word, consternation. history, there's going to be a lot of consternation coming in this podcast if there weren't enough already. History repeats itself, Nick writes. Alex and Dave, I'm not sure I believe Fa'atano was the Steelers' number one guy. The Steelers selecting Troy Fa'atano immediately made me think of the 2016 draft. That year, the Steelers were very interested in William Jackson III. The Bengals took him two picks ahead. Steelers panicked and took Artie Burns to fit the narrative of Steelers need a corner. This year, it was clear as day. The Steelers wanted Amarius Mims. Bengals stole him two picks prior. Fine, he says. This year, they just had to get a right tackle to move Broderick to left tackle. So they took Fa'atano, who doesn't check many boxes in what the Steelers look for, he says, and hasn't played right tackle since high school. Would it really have been that bad to just take the best player available, Cooper DeJean, in his opinion? He would have filled a need or maybe a wide receiver. He says, Dan Moore Jr. is serviceable left tackle. I just can't help but feel like they panicked again. What do you guys think? Thanks for all the hard work. I'm going to take a deep breath here. I'll let you jump in first.
I don't see it as a panic move. I really don't. Burns was not rated as a top guy on anyone's draft board, really, in 2016. Fa'atano was. He was considered a top 10, top 12 type of overall prospect in this year's class. I mean, I think they looked at Mims and I'm sure they liked him, but maybe they didn't like him as much as people thought. You hear like Taylor talk about Mims and how raw he was, and it's probably coming from some stuff he's hearing from inside that Steelers building. And then I had the issue of him not getting on the scale at his individual pro day workout and what would be the issue and reason for that. So no, I mean, listen, they could have gone a receiver or Barton or a corner, Arnold, and I would have totally understood that for sure. But I think they hear. I mean, you just I know that again. Every team says they love their first round pick, but the hero Marcon, just in his voice and kind of his face when he talked about how agonizing the final couple of picks were to see if he would slip to Pittsburgh at 20. I think that's sincerity, that they really viewed him highly. And I think the NFL viewed him highly as well. And just because of the run on the class and some concerns over his position fit and tweener ishness, if that's a phrase, caused him to fall. So no, I don't see this as an Artie Burns 2.0 at all. If anything, it to me, it's the exact opposite. It's almost the Castro-like in the sense of a guy that we think is really talented, did not think he was going to be there, but he falls to us instead.
That's a good analogy there. I don't view it anywhere close to the William Jackson, Artie Burns situation either. Look, we were both trying to figure out where to mock a tackle for this team somewhere in our mock drafts, and I think the statement that clear as day they wanted Amarius Mims, we don't really know that. I mean, what if Fa'atano is off the board and the Bengals don't take Mims and the Steelers had their choice there. I mean, we just don't know what we've all been talking center. Most people thought that, you know, when the Steelers get on the clock, it was probably going to be a center. And if they couldn't get one that they like, then maybe a Marius Mims. So I don't think you can just sit here and say, oh man, they had a post-it note saying Amarius Mims or nothing. You know, what was that? What do they usually write on those things?
No matter what, right?
Yeah, on the sticky note. Yeah. No matter what. I don't know if we know that. So no, we're gonna have to disagree with you on that, Nick Shuley there. But appreciate, you know, you write in all the time there, so appreciate the emails there. All right, Alex, we gotta get free here. We got a lot of work to do before we get to the second day of the 2024 NFL draft getting underway. Got a lot of content continuing going up. Alex is gonna work on a film room for everybody there as well too. So we'll be back soon enough to discuss the round two picks that the Steelers make and start start looking ahead to the third day of the draft and what that may or may not look like. So hopefully everybody enjoyed this podcast. We'll get it up as soon as possible. And in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Cazorra. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate, SteelersDepot.com. Hit the donate button, or if you want an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button, follow the directions that way. We'll have another discussion thread up for the day two up on the site. We invite everybody to join us on that. Had quite a few comments yesterday. That did really well on top of it. So until tomorrow, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.